Will the members please register their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the quorum.
Thirty-three present, seven absent.
Representative Miller?
Speaker, Mr. Guy is excused from the call of the House today. I'll ask the unanimous consent of other absent members to be shown as excused on official state business.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Representative Miller?
Mr. Speaker, we've just gotten word that Representative Swanson apparently is weathered in Valdez and wasn't able to get back, so I'll ask the unanimous consent of Representative Swanson also be excused from the call of the House today.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. House, please stand at ease. House, please come to order. Representative Greening?
Mr. Speaker, may I be shown as present?
Clerk, please indicate the presence of Representatives Greening and Bradley in the chambers. Is there anyone else who missed roll call this morning? Representative McKinnon? Our chaplain today is Pastor Hunt of the Resurrection Lutheran Church. The House will please rise for prayer.
Let us pray. Almighty God, we thank you for your creation of earth and sky and sea. And today we rejoice in the soft white snow falling on our capital city. Snow reminds us of King David's word. Remove my sin and I will be clean. Wash me and I will be whiter than snow. So in order that we may begin this new week with a clean slate, forgive us our shortcomings and failures and sin, and give us new consciousness so that we may think before saying a hasty word that might hurt a colleague or staff associate. We request a new beginning in the name of him who came as the new creation, Jesus of Nazareth, the Christ. Amen.
Representative Lafine.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous request that the prayer be spread upon a journal.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Will the clerk please certify as to the correctness of the daily journal?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journals from the 54th through the 56th days in House Supplement Number 16.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent this body approve the journal as certified by the chief clerk for 54th through 56th days and for House Supplement Number 16.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Brings us down to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction to the chambers? Representative Nakak.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I take great pleasure in introducing a group of students and their coordinator who've come down from Nome. They just spent the weekend in Anchorage seeing the kickoff of the Iditarod race, which in approximately 3 weeks should show a successful end and some kind of a new winner. I have with me in Gallery B the Title VII Indian Education Student Advisory Committee from the Nome Belts High School. And the names I will list and showing the terrific mixture of communities which are represented by the Nome Belts High School complex. I will give the original homes of, if not the students, of their parents. I have from Deering and Nome, Gloria Carmen. From Gamble and Nome, Peggy Ignatinat. From Nome, Susan Luke. From Gamble and Nome, Phyllis Ignatinat. From Buckland and Nome, Vernita Armstrong. From Nome, Mark Pearson. From Nome, John Hanlon, and from Savunga and Nome, Barrett Panaya. The sponsor coordinator is Mr. Richard Burmeister. This group of students and their coordinator are in the process of their two-day visit down here to perhaps gain a little exposure into the operations of our state government. They will be visiting different components of both the House and the Senate, the Office of the Governor, the Department of Education, and are visiting different House and Senate committees, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, which they met with this morning, the HES Committee, the Finance Committee, They will be visiting the Bill Ray Center. They will visit with all gubernatorial candidates. They are following Iditarod legislation, and their schedule is even fuller than that. Thank you very much from Nome.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery B, we have a gentleman from Fairbanks who has been active for a number of years in the Town and Village Association, working to improve economic conditions, not only in the Fairbanks itself, but also in the interior as a whole. Mr. Jerry Smetzer.
Are there further guests for introduction? If not, are there any messages from the governor?
Dear Mr. Speaker, I read the following and I'm transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 77, relating to reapportionment litigation, Legislative Resolve Number 7. Senate Joint Resolution Number 37, relating to the conservation of bowhead whales, Legislative Resolve Number 9. Senate Joint Resolution Number 45, relating to proposed Internal Revenue Service regulations relating to state deferred compensation plans and supporting H.R. 10746, Legislative Resolve Number 8. Signed sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. I have no further messages from the governor, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Freeman. House, please stand at ease. House, please come to order. So we're down to, we're at messages from the governor. Are there any further messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the President granted powers of free conference to the Conference Committee considering Senate Bill 118, Supplemental Appropriation to the Department of Administration with an effective date, and House Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 118, Second Finance, amended House with a new title. Senator Poland, Chairman, Senator Sackett, Senator Sumner. The Senate has approved both legislative citations congratulating Blas D. Malasardi by Representative Buchholz, and they are returned. They've been sent to enrolling. The Senate has failed to recede from its amendments to House Bill Number 611, Supplemental Appropriation to the Office of the Governor, Telecommunications, namely, House Bill Number 611, amended Senate with a new title. The President has appointed the following members to a free conference committee to meet with the like committee from the House to consider the above bills. Senator Holman, Chairman, Senator Orsini, Senator Curtula. The Senate has approved legislative citation commending the Metlakatla Chiefs by Senator Ziegler, and it is transmitted for consideration. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs has had Senate Bill 372, an act extending provisions of law governing the sale, repurchase, and disposition of proceeds of the sale of tax foreclosed real property to home rule municipalities, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill 372 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mrs. Rudd, Chairman, concurred in by Phillips, Snyder, Rudd, Osi, Nakak, and Kelly. Having no recommendation, Loveseth and Smith. Senate Bill 372 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had Senate Bill 432 amended, relating to powers of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 432 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Cooper, Freeman, Rode, Haugen, Buchholz, Meekin, Swanson, and Duncan. Mr. Greening has no recommendation. Senate Bill 432 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Concurrent Resolution 110, extending the proclamation of disaster emergency in the village of Carlock, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Nakak, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Nakak, Lathine, Dankworth, McKinnon, Kelly, and Miles. House Concurrent Resolution 110 has no further referral. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 815 relating to oil and gas conservation under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 815 and that it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by Osterbach, Snyder, Malone, Bennett, and Miller. Mr. Urien has no recommendation. House Bill 815 has a further referral to finance. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
House Concurrent Resolution 112 with a transmittal letter and a draft of a contract by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, approving the sale of royalty oil to Alaska Petrochemical Company.
House Concurrent Resolution 112 on the royalty oil sale and House Concurrent Resolution 113, which is another royalty oil sale, being introduced by the Governor today. For the time being, the only committee referral or committee of assignment will be the Special Committee on Royalty Oil and Gas. As the hearings proceed in that committee, the other committees that referrals that may be required or desirable may be added. HCR 112 will be referred to the Special Committee on Royalty Oil and Gas.
House Concurrent Resolution 113 with a letter and a contract. These contracts are being duplicated by the Governor's office and will be available later. By the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, approving the sale of royalty oil to Tesoro Alaskan Petroleum.
We refer to the Special Committee on Royalty Oil and Gas.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of House bills.
House Bill 871 by the Commerce Committee. An act relating to service charges under the Alaska Retail Installment Sales Act.
Refer to the Commerce Committee.
House Bill 872 by the Commerce Committee. An act relating to interest rates used in calculating reserves for life insurance policies and providing for an effective date.
Refer to the Commerce Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Urien. House, please stand at ease. We're down to consideration of the calendar. The clerk, please read the first item on the calendar.
House Bill 551 by Chatterton, Malone, Phillips, and Swanson. An act providing an exemption for senior citizens from payment for land leased from the state. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 551 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 551 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Nackack, Kelly, and Lathine. Mr. McKinnon has no recommendation. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 551 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with the State Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill 551 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Cooper, Freeman, Rode, Haugen, Schaefer, Swanson, Buchholz, Duncan, and Greening. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the State Affairs Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Does the clerk have any amendments to the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 551 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. The clerk, please read House Bill 551 in third reading.
Committee substitute for House Bill 551 by the State Affairs Committee. An act providing an exemption for senior citizens from payment for land leased from the state.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill, Committee Substitute for House Bill 551 is, at least in my estimation, an effort by the legislature to be consistent in their treatment of senior citizens. In the past, we have made provisions to exempt senior citizens from property tax. That was followed by a credit where the senior citizens rent, and this is, again, is an effort to carry that on to when a senior citizen uses a place of permanent abode, leased land. It has a fiscal zero note on it, and I think it's a worthwhile piece of legislation. It received a unanimous recommendation of the Finance Committee. I would recommend its passage.
Further discussion, Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question. If there's a zero fiscal note, does that mean that there presently are no senior citizens that are living on leasehold property? Or I guess putting that another way, are there any senior citizens that are affected presently by this bill?
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To my knowledge, there are no senior citizens that will be affected by this bill at this point in time. Mr. Speaker, further, I am told that with respect to the fiscal impact, this would be a negative revenue situation whenever it occurs and fiscal notes are not used, where it just is a matter of a negative revenue matter. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Urien.
Speaker, not to disagree with Mr. Chatterton, but I know there's at least one senior citizen living on a leasehold land because they called me on the phone last session during our debate on the lease bill. I don't remember the number of it, and there were constituents of yours, Mr. Speaker, and they were very concerned about how much their lease rent had increased over the years and found themselves in tough straits to make those lease payments. And so I'm sure that this passage of this bill will benefit at least those people, and I'm sure that there are probably some others that are living on leasehold land.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I suspect that Mr. Urien is correct. I suspect that probably the reason they're zero the fiscal note is because they don't really know. But in any event, I would suspect it'd be small. I would call your attention to the last second page. It says the legislature shall annually appropriate from the general fund any trust fund sums necessary to reimburse the trust fund for amounts lost. But in any event, it would be very small. And again, I would still recommend its passage.
Point of information, Mr. Urien is correct. So further discussion. Ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 551 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, no nays, 2 excused.
So House Bill 551 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on the daily calendar.
House Bill 618 by Malone, an act relating to the annual report of the State Commission for Human Rights. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 618 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass with attached amendment. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Bennett, O.C., Chatterton, Cotton, Phillips, and Parr. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 618 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Freeman, Rode, Haugen, Schaefer, Meekin, Swanson, Buchholz, Duncan, Greening, and Cooper. I have 2 amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that amendment number 1 by the Hess Committee be withdrawn.
The amendment has not been moved, so we can just put it to one side. Would the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment number 2 by Parr, page 1, line 18. Section 2, this one has been duplicated and it's been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Amendment Number 2.
There's objection. Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, the reason for Amendment Number 2, or the proposed amendment, is also on the members' desks. There are 2 sheets based on the tabulations made by the EEO office. I didn't take all of the salary ranges, but if you'll look on these, the top sheet is salary range 22 to 28. That's the top. The other sheet is the bottom salary range, 5 to 10. If you look at that salary range 22 to 28, Mr. Speaker, I think you'll find that the percentages of white males go from 100 down to the very lowest. I believe it's about 74 in health and social services. I think you'll notice the percentages that the minority male and minority female columns both have an awful lot of zeros in them. If you look at the second sheet, Mr. Speaker, ranges 5 to 10, I think you'll find the picture is reversed. Now, these are the very bottom slots. you'll find that there are relatively few white males in there, an awful lot of white females, and where there aren't white females, and they're minority females. Mr. Speaker, this indicates a situation. It would not necessarily indicate that the proposed amendment is the answer. However, Mr. Speaker, I think most members of the body, if they didn't get a copy of the letter that the Human Rights Commission sent to the governor, they did see a report of it in the press. And what it says, Mr. Speaker, boiling it down to about one or two sentences, is that the EEO office has done virtually nothing. They've had virtually no success, no accomplishments of any kind. Now, Mr. Speaker, I'm aware that there is a bill in to make that EEO office statutory and locate it in the governor's office, probably. But past experience indicates that we can't really rely on it. What my bill, my proposed amendment would ask is that the Human Rights Commission would do essentially the same thing in this aspect, this respect, as the legislative auditor does for us. It would be an outside assessment of what progress is being made by these state departments. I am not content, and I don't think this body should be content, with an in-house type of operation. We've seen it be a complete failure so far. I know of no indication that that's going to change.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I note that the amendment, which is now amendment number two or whatever it is, was very similar to the amendment number one, which Mr. Parr had withdrawn. I'm curious as to why it seems to me they do the same thing, and I'm wondering why he's doing it this way. One had the committee, a concurrence of the committee, and one seems to be Mr. Parr's amendment, and I'm just curious.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, the Finance Committee did not see fit to buy the House Committee amendment, and in redoing it to try a floor amendment, I did change the word investigate to make an overall assessment. It was not my intention, Mr. Speaker, that the Human Rights Commission go in and put 10 people in for 2 weeks on a particular department. What I would like them to do is to tell us in a few sentences, Department X has made no progress toward equal employment opportunity in the last year. And the reason seems to be that neither the commissioner nor the division directors are making any effort in this program. There have been 47 complaints to the commission concerning this department. In other words, a very brief report. That's all I'm asking for. In fact, I would think that in one annual report, probably one page would be sufficient to tell this body what is happening. And I'm afraid that the indication that the word investigate implied to the Human Rights Commission some sort of big, full-scale, very expensive investigation.
Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When the people from the Human Rights Commission came and testified before the House Finance Committee on this bill, the Chair, Diana Snowden, testified that there was one position that was supposedly being transferred from the office, the EEO office, to the Human Rights Commission, but that position was withdrawn. Furthermore, the testimony was that the Human Rights Commission is only an enforcement agency and is not a compliance agency, and the EEO office is supposedly the agency that takes care of this sort of thing in state government. I do agree with Mr. Parr that there has been inequities in the employment in our state government. We have, as you see in the chart that was provided us, a lot of these inequities that is shown, and it is really a very unfair thing. However, this isn't the job of the Human Rights Commission. It is the job of EEO, and if we do want to adopt this amendment, we must take care of the fiscal note. We must provide another position for the Human Rights Commission to comply with this amendment. And this is why I oppose this amendment, because we haven't provided for it in the fiscal note. Otherwise, it might not be a bad idea. However, the Human Rights Commission has testified that it is not one of their privileges and duties. Thank you.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I have in my hand Section 1880.060, Powers and Duties of the Commission. Subsection 5 includes, among other things, well, it says study the problems of discrimination and so forth, and publish results of investigations and research as in its judgment will tend to eliminate discrimination because of race, religion, color, national ancestry, and so forth. And I think that they do have the authority right now. Now, the commission is, if a commission tends to regard itself as only an enforcement agency, Mr. Speaker, they have not been reading their statutes lately.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's clearly within the purview of the authority of the commission to do this sort of a task, and I think it's clearly within our authority to direct some of the activities of the commission. They may or may not need more personnel to carry on some of the activities we require them or request of them, but I don't think it's out of order for us to make a point of what we're making here and ask them to do this investigation.
Representative Urien. House, please stand at ease.
House, please come to order.
Before the at ease we had under consideration, we still do amendment, it's listed as amendment number 2, but it's the first amendment to House Bill 618. Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, on the amendment, we heard some testimony in finance from the Human Rights Commission, and was their view that this amendment wasn't necessary in light of the report that they'd already done. Incidentally, the report that Mr. Parr refers to is a 7-page letter from the chairman of the Human Rights Commission outlining some of the problems that EEOC has had and some of the possible corrections to make it a more effective agency. The problem I have with the amendment is it seems to duplicate what the main function of EEOC, and that is a reporting requirement. The Human Rights Commission has that power now. As a matter of fact, I think they should have the power to investigate. That word doesn't bother me. I think they have that power now. And if the EEOC is not doing its job, the Human Rights Commission has the authority to come in at any time. But this amendment is kind of takes over the function of the EEOC, and I think if we're going to do it, we ought to consider abolishing it. I think the conclusions that contained in that report, if followed, will probably correct the problem and make this unnecessary. But I see the law now is allowing the Human Rights Commission to fully use its powers to correct an abuse, and I think that's where its duties should lie, and that this amendment duplicates a function. And if to be effective, we're going to have to put somebody in the Human Rights Commission to do what's already being done in the EEOC. So I think at this time anyway, before we take further action on the bill to beef up the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission, we better let this one lie.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, I agree with Mr. Greening and with Ms. Buchholz in deciding to vote against this amendment, and I would like to associate myself with all of the remarks that they have made, and in addition point out that the sheets that Representative Parr has made available to us on statistics on employment of minorities and women in the State Department were developed by the EEO office. And that is the kind of information that we would expect either the EEO office or the Human Rights Commission to develop for us in making some kind of assessment as to how we're doing on getting minorities and women into higher in the state. And I would anticipate that the Human Rights Commission would have to use that same information which had been developed by the EEO office in order to make that report to us, unless we were willing to appropriate a fairly large amount of money to them to do an independent study, in which case we would be asking them to duplicate the work of the EEO office. Now, I recognize, and I think everyone here recognizes, that statistics are not really what we're talking about in an EEO function. We're talking about recruitment and getting people on board and making sure that discrimination does not take place. And that is also a function of the EEO office, and I think that they are going to be able to do that function increasingly in the future. So I would not vote for this amendment because I believe that if we adopt it, the Human Rights Commission probably would use the raw material that has been developed by the EEO office in the first place, and that the EEO office is very capable of giving us that information. What we do with the information is up to us, of course. In fact, as Mr. Parr mentioned, there is a bill now in the Labor and Management Committee establishing the EEO function statutorily, and I would like to see his amendment added to that bill. I think that that's a very clear need on our part to look at the status of state departments in pursuing EEO, and I would like to see his amendment added to that bill.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, Mrs. Rudd said something that's very true. Statistics are not what we're looking for. And, Mr. Speaker, what I'm concerned about is that we would come back here this time next year, and I would come up here stand up here on the floor with another 2 pages of these figures, and they won't vary very much from what we presently have. The tendency on not only this EEO office, but frequently among others, is simply to substitute some paperwork requirements for strong affirmative action by the people in charge. Now, Mr. Speaker, I cannot guarantee that there would be an immediate, an overnight improvement if the Human Rights Commission were doing this and if the annual report being distributed all over the state would contain such an assessment. I suspect it would make a difference. Mr. Speaker, again, to come back to the point that Representative Rudd was making about the duplication of effort, I assume that the Human Rights Commission would receive these statistical reports from EEO. I know that's a given, shall we say. But the Human Rights Commission also gets complaints from employees in various state agencies. Unfortunately, it generally, at least what I've seen so far, it investigates these complaints on a one-by-one basis. Now, I think if you'd add those complaints which have come in, let's say, on Department X in the Anchorage office for over a year's time, and the same, the Juneau office of that same department for a year's time, and the statistical data, and put in about 2 good hard days' work, I imagine they could come up with a brief report that would be what I'm looking for.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to support Mr. Parr's amendment, but I didn't want let this opportunity go by without speaking to the ramifications of the statistics in the high salary ranges and the low salary ranges, and just anticipate possibly a chastisement from the minority leader when I castigate this administration. I don't much care whether past Democratic administrations were just as bad or even worse. Simple fact is these statistics are appalling. They're unacceptable, and this administration or one coming after it, if this administration succeeds itself, they should provide a little more equitable distribution because I don't think they're very good now. Thank you.
So further discussion? Ready for the question? Question is, shall amendment number 1 be adopted? Take a roll call vote. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 12 Nays, 3 Excused.
So amendment number 1 has been adopted. Is clerk of further amendments to the bill?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that House Bill 618 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The clerk please read House Bill 618 in third reading.
House Bill 618 amended by Malone, an act relating to the annual report of the State Commission for Human Rights.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 618 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
37 yeas, no nays, 3 excused.
And so House Bill 618 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar. Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, may we return to introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, revert to introduction of guests. Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A, I believe, I can't see them all, but we have some students from Floyd Dryden Junior High School, ninth grade civics class. Their chaperone is Mr. Greeley. I understand he's not present, but I would like to read the names of the students. We have with us Phil Connor, Marvin Van, Roy Mielke, Norman Hales, Scott McGonigal, Sean McCormick, Matt Baxendall, and Kirk Miller.
Are there further guests for introduction? Now we'll revert to the regular order of business. Will the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill number 844 by Byrne, an act relating to the donation of blood by those who have reached the age of 17 years. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 844 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Bennett, Nackack, O.C. Cotton, Phillips, Parr, and Byrne. Having no recommendation, Buchholz. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that House Bill 844 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Clerk, please read House Bill 844 in third reading.
House Bill number 844 by Byrne, an act relating to the donation of blood by those who have reached the age of 17 years.
Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, just a brief word on this bill. I introduced it at the request of the blood bank in Anchorage and some of the other community blood banks throughout the state, and also at the request of a number of young people, particularly 17-year-olds, who are interested in donating blood. Right now, a 17-year-old is able to donate blood physically as well as mentally, same as a 17-year-old can serve in our armed forces. But the problem is that the 17-year-old has to go home and get his mother or his father to sign a permission slip, come back to the blood bank, and this type of thing. And it's an inconvenience for them, and it discourages many of them from participating in this adult activity. We'd like to get the young people to be more active in this area. I think that what we're telling the young people is that they have an opportunity here to become adults in this area, as well as some other areas that we've given them license to work in. It also expands the number, what this bill would do is expand the number of available donors to a community blood bank. In Anchorage, it may not be quite as important as in some of the smaller communities where the number of people available for donating blood is relatively small. If a person can, or if a small community has the need for a special type of blood, they may have a particular problem. But the larger the number of donors, of, you know, eligible donors in a community, the better for all of us. I can't think of any reason why a 17-year-old cannot donate blood, either from a physical point of view, a mental point of view. Actually, a 16 or 15-year-old person can donate blood quite well also, but for practical purposes, I think we should stop at the age of 17 and let the 17-year-olds do that. What we're doing is we're letting them donate blood without the requirement that they get permission of their parents. And every blood bank is required to check a person's blood, make sure they're able to donate blood, and take a history to see if they have any problems, see if they're eligible donors when they do this. And I can see no problems with it, and I urge the passage of the bill. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, after the discussion by the sponsor of the bill and talking about the request from the blood banks, it occurred to me, but I thought that I might, and then I decided not to discuss the influence the banking lobby might have had on this bill. And, Mr. Speaker, with the youngsters who were just introduced by Mr. Duncan, I'm wondering if it's a very good thing for us to show them that in 2.5 or 3 years we're going to be getting their blood. You know, maybe we should have waited until they left the gallery.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, as a blood donor and as the mother of a blood donor, I would like to speak in favor of this bill also, primarily because when my daughter became 17 years of age and wanted to give blood, it took about a month for her and me to coordinate our schedules to the point where we both could go down to the blood bank together and I could sign off for her. She was able to make that decision by herself at that age, and I don't think it was really necessary for me to go with her to sign off, and I want to congratulate Representative Byrne for introducing this bill.
Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do differ with Representative Rudd. As a mother of four, I still would like to keep some of my rights as a mother, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I don't want to give it away so soon. 17 years old is fine. I think they are perfectly capable of giving blood even at 15, as Dr. Byrne mentioned, but as a mother, I think I'll vote no on this bill.
Representative Bradley.
Ms. Speaker, just sort of an academic question through the chair to the sponsor. Is there any sort of, and I'm not really up on this, but I'm aware that some religions don't want doctors working on people or needles stuck in them or anything. I wonder if, I don't mean really to speak to that. It's just sort of we've got a little time, so I thought I'd ask the question. Is there any sort of violation of religious principles involved here? Let's say that the parents of the 17-year-old, now I guess it's 18, that they would prefer their child not to under their religious tenets, but this way it's an end run. Obviously, it would only occur in one out of a zillion cases, but I just wondered if anybody thought of that.
Representative Byrne.
I don't see any conflict there at all, because I don't see any religious conflicts there at all. Like, any donor can donate blood anytime he wants to donate, anytime he's eligible and passes the test on it there. Just a human interest story on the religious angle of it there, though. It reminds me of about, 18 or 20 years, 20 years ago now, that one of Danny Plotnick's Office of Aging, one of his kids was born at the old Providence Hospital in Anchorage. And the boy is now a page over here in the Senate chambers, Mike Plotnick, and he was an RH baby at the time, and the religious angle made me think of it, because we couldn't get any blood donors at that particular time, and my blood happened to match his, and I squirmed around for a while and finally laid down and squeezed off a pint for him, you got to be careful of that, because after a while they drain you dry if you're so available. But anyhow, we give him a pint of blood, and he's lived in here today. He is a fine young man in Juneau, and I'm affectionately known by his family as Rabbi Byrne now.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of things about blood donation that I'm not too well up on, but I've read accounts of big cities and places where winos sell their blood. Is there a place in Alaska, do they buy blood? And if so, is there a danger here that we might have people selling their blood that were maybe physically able to produce the blood but wasn't mentally capable of making the decision whether that was a proper thing to do? Could that be a problem? I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
Representative Byrne.
Well, Mr. Speaker, in Alaska, nobody buys or sells blood. The policy is that the blood banks, whether they're independent community blood banks or whether those blood banks are located in the hospital, receives the blood from the donor as a gift and then passes it on to the recipient, to the patient as a gift. And the blood banks or the hospital is just charged for servicing that blood. And that gets pretty expensive sometimes, depending on what you have to do with it. But there isn't any charge for the blood itself. Now, in some places outside in the lower 48, they do pay for blood. Not so much as a matter of policy, but as a matter of convenience, because or of equity or justice, because sometimes a person has a very special type of blood that needs to be called upon frequently for that blood. And blood banks make it a policy of paying that particular person for his time and his effort, because actually we're using him more as a machine to produce a certain type of blood that's needed in the community. And that's fair and that's reasonable. But in Alaska, we don't buy blood or sell blood. It's a donation that's passed on to the patient.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, I support this, but I don't know when we're going to draw the line here. First it's free land, now it's free blood.
Representative Urien.
Well, the way I see it, Mr. Speaker, with the passage of this bill, will allow Byrne to get blood from Bradley without the permission of Freeman.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Freeman asked a question about buying blood, and maybe Representative Byrne can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that there is a trend on the part of blood banks and blood providers throughout the world to get away from the buying of blood for two reasons. One is because when they buy blood, the people who are selling it might be tempted to lie on the questionnaire that they fill out before they give the blood as to whether or not they've had certain diseases and so on, and there are certain diseases which would prevent you from being able to give blood for the rest of your life. So it's possible that people who sell their blood could lie about that and pass that disease or some imperfection in their blood onto the recipient. And I believe that there is a worldwide movement to get away from the buying of blood for that reason. And for the second reason would be simply to make it a humanitarian thing, that blood would be donated rather than bought or sold, so that it would become a very common and helpful act on the part of people for each other.
Further discussion. Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Buchholz made a very eloquent plea on the basis of motherhood, and I agree with her. I have a mother, certainly, and as a mother lover, I'm going to vote against the bill.
Further discussion. You ready for the question? Question is, shall House Bill 844 pass the House? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 3 Nays, 2 Excused.
So House Bill 844 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar.
There's a citation congratulating the Skagway High School drill team by Representatives Duncan and Miller.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move for approval of this citation.
Hearing no objection, the citation is approved. The record show that the citation was approved unanimously. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar.
There's a citation congratulating the Ketchikan killer whales by Senator Ziegler.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the resolution.
Mr. Speaker.
Hearing no objection.
Object for a moment of
object
debate.
For the purpose of discussion, I presume, Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, when it was first introduced, I just saw the title and I never heard of the team. And I thought at first that the Ketchikan killer whales consisted of the sponsor and Mr. Gardner and Mr. Freeman. But after having read it, I've decided that's not the case. So I withdraw my objection.
Hearing no objection. The citation is approved. Let the record show that the citation was approved unanimously. Brings us to the end of today's calendar. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, earlier this morning we heard a report from the State Affairs Committee passing out House Concurrent Resolution number 110, placing it in rules with the concurrence of the Rules Chairman. I'm going to move at this time that this, because there is very definitely a time element, I'm going to move at this time that House Concurrent Resolution number 110, extending the proclamation of disaster emergency in the village of Carluck, be taken up as a special order of business at this time.
Hearing no objection, HCR 110 will be taken up as a special order of business. The clerk please read House Concurrent Resolution number 110 in second reading.
House Concurrent Resolution number 110 by the State Affairs Committee, extending the proclamation of disaster emergency in the village of Carluck. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Concurrent Resolution 110 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Nackack, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Nackack, Lathine, Dankworth, McKinnon, Kelly, and Miles. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I hope an instructive comment. This resolution is necessary because of positions taken by Mrs. Rudd and myself and the Judiciary Committee when we were crafting the emergency powers provisions with regard to the Alaska Disaster Office and so forth. We felt that although the present governor might well not do it, that the bill as it originally was in last year would have given a governor who was of erratic inclination to continually rule this whole state by decree by simply renewing disaster proclamations covering entire areas or sub-areas of the state and could provide for an awful lot of threat to individual liberties. Certainly that's not the case here, and the disaster does exist, but in the future there may be many of these resolutions because of that provision that we put in the law. So the members should not be surprised by that. That is just to assure that the legislature has some check on the otherwise rather all-pervasive powers of the governor under the new act that we passed last year.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? Question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution number 110 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, no nays, 2 excused.
So House Concurrent Resolution number 110 has passed the House. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, last week we had a message from the other body indicating that they had passed House Bill 643, junk telephone calls, in the form of a committee substitute or an amendment, Mr. Speaker. The amendment that the Senate made was virtually identical to the language that we'd adopted. Instead of making junk telephone calls one item in a list of prohibited acts, instead it set up a special section. But nevertheless, it kept virtually the in fact is almost exactly the same language. So I would prefer it the way we did it, a little bit less awkward. On the other hand, it doesn't make all that much difference. So rather than prolong the body on this thing, I'm going to recommend that we do adopt the Senate amendment. I'll therefore move at this time, Mr. Speaker, that this body approve the Senate amendments, thus adopting House Bill 643, amended by the Senate.
Question is, shall the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 643? Is there further discussion? Ready for the question? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, no nays, 2 excused.
So the House has concurred in the Senate amendments to House Bill 643, and the clerk will please notify the Senate. Representative Miller.
As an aside to the body, in the midst of the session today, I got a note from my staff indicating that I'm supposed to call Vancouver, B.C. after this session. Apparently, Vancouver is being flooded with junk telephone calls, and they're curious to see what we have done in answer to that problem. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Anderson be excused from the call March 16th and 17th.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The member will be excused on the dates indicated. Representative Urien.
I hope Mr. Miller's telephone call isn't a junk call, but Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Dankworth be excused from the call of the House the 10th through the 13th this month.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Member will be excused on the dates indicated. We are under unfinished business. This time I'd like to take care of some appointments that have been lying around for some time. To begin with, last fall, letters went to the presiding officers of each house from the governor requesting appointments in an ex officio capacity of one legislator from the House and one from the Senate to an advisory board on emergency medical services. I haven't consulted anyone in the House on this appointment, but at this time I'm going to appoint myself to that ex officio position. Also, the governor had requested prior to the session that each House appoint two members to a governor's commission on bodily injury reparations. And at this time, I'd like to appoint Representative Carpenter and Representative Rudd to serve in that capacity. Is there further unfinished business to come before the House? Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I bring up the reconsideration of committee substitute for House Bill 425 amended at this time?
Places the bill before us in third reading. Would the clerk please read House Bill 425 in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 425, amended by the Resources Committee, an act relating to erosion control and providing for an effective date. I have an amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Chatterton.
Mr. Speaker, for purposes of a specific amendment, I would move and ask unanimous consent to return to second reading.
There's objection. Would the clerk please read the proposed amendment?
Amendment Number 2 by Mr. Chatterton. Page 2. Line 11. Delete the word permanent. Page 2, line 12. Delete the word solutions. Page 2, lines 11 and 12. Replace the deleted words with protection for the greater amount of property by property damage.
Representative Chatterton.
Mr. Speaker, the bill now, as it now stands before us, says that when there is a limit or a maximum amount of the funds available for appropriation as grants to applications for erosion control, why with that limited amount, why those projects will receive the highest priority or the first priority that are capable of achieving a permanent solution. Mr. Speaker, I submit to you that to determine a permanent solution would be a rather long involved process, a permanent solution to any erosion matter. Mr. Speaker, I would even further submit that it might be even indeterminate. So what to me and the intent of the proposed amendment is that what is much more important is that we should try and protect the what might result if we did not so protect the maximum amount of property damage. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further objection to the motion to return the bill to second reading for the purpose of adopting a specific amendment? Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Representative Chatterton.
Mr. Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of the amendment.
For the purpose of a possible amendment to the amendment, I will object. House, please stand at ease. Would the clerk please read Amendment Number 2?
Amendment Number 2 by Mr. Chatterton. Page 2, line 11. Delete the word permanent. Page 2, line 12, delete the word solutions. Page 2, lines 11 and 12, replace deleted words with protection for the greater amount of property damage.
The purpose of the at ease was to discuss the use of the word for after the word protection in the proposed substitute language on lines 11 and 12. During the at ease, I conferred with the sponsor of the amendment. I think there's an agreement that the word intended there was from. If there's no objection from the House, the clerk will revise the amendment to reflect protection from the greater amount of property damage. Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One, for helping me on my English. Your language is much better, obviously. And Mr. Speaker, I would now move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of the amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Is there objection to adoption of amendment number 2? Hearing no objection, amendment number 2 is adopted. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for House Bill 425 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. The clerk, please read House Bill 425 in third reading.
Committee substitute for House Bill 425 amended by the Resources Committee, an act relating to erosion control and providing for an effective date.
Ready for the question? Question is, shall House Bill 425 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 1 Nay, 3 Excused.
And so, House Bill 425 has passed the House on reconsideration. The bill does carry an effective date clause. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the roll call on House Bill 425 be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Representative Nackack.
Mr. Speaker, may we revert to introduction of guests, please?
Hearing no objection, revert to introduction of guests. Representative Nackack.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, a distinguished Alaskan, personal friend, formerly a member of this body and the other also, where he represented me very ably, Senator Willie Hensley.
As a former member of the body, it's customary to extend the privilege of the floor. Willie, have you anything to say to the House? Are there further guests for introduction? If not, we'll revert to the regular order of business. We're under unfinished business. Is there further unfinished business to come before the House at this time? Special orders. Are there any special orders? Representative Lathine.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to take the floor for the purposes of giving a special thanks.
You have the floor, Representative Lathine.
I guess really it's a special thanks for life. As you know, over the weekend there was a fire at our place, and our children were there, and with a very capable babysitter, Debbie Fink, and she managed to get them out to all safe and sound, and our dog Ginger, along with the kids. We really appreciate all the help that we have received from the people and friends, next door neighbors. Also, the Juneau Douglas Fire Department did a splendid job in getting there in a real timely fashion, putting out the fire. Police department taking care of the kids and doing all those things. So we just wanted to give kind of a public thanks, both Judy and I, for all the work that was done for us.
Are there any more special orders? Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on a conference I attended this weekend.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Meekins.
Speaker, this weekend, my Health and Social Services Subcommittee held a hearing on child abuse in conjunction with the Governor's Conference on Child Abuse in Anchorage. And I'd like to explain some of the things that I intend to do and some of the problems that I ran into in the testimony. Speaker, last year in Health and Social Services budget, my subcommittee recommended to the Finance Committee that we reduce that budget by $6 million, which was a 12% cut from the governor's budget. That's a pretty large cut, and we were humorously called the slash committee, and I think to a certain extent we deserved that. But those cuts we stood by and fought for, and prevailed. This year, however, I'd like to explain to the body that it's at least going to be my position probably that in some cases that budget I think is going to have to be increased, and primarily due to the problems of child abuse in this state. You know, it seems, I think, if one reads just the press accounts, that child abuse in Alaska is something that happens once a year or once every 6 months. every once in a while we hear some tragic incidents of child abuse, and it's reported widely in the press. But it's not that infrequent. In fact, since the last press report in my memory about 6 months ago of that got wide attention, there have been, in fact, two children have been killed in this state due to child abuse, and in fact there's been one conviction of the parent involved, and another one is pending. In addition to that, I talked to two persons who work at the critical care, the acute care facilities in Anchorage, two of the hospitals in Anchorage, and only, those are the only two I did talk to, and both of them reported six cases of critically injured children directly due to child abuse that they are currently or have in the last 6 months been taking care of. These critically injured are only the small portion of the number of cases, the hundreds of cases that are reported within the year, and the reported cases are only a very small portion of the total number of cases in the state. In fact, by most accounts, and it's difficult to get an accurate number, but by most accounts, Alaska is the worst state in the nation in regards to child abuse. And the tragic nature of this, Mr. Speaker, is in addition to the sadness and the tragedy that we feel when we hear about child abuse, but experience has shown that 90% of the cases can be avoided or somehow resolved without splitting up the family involved. In this state, spending $900 million this year, and yet we're not really addressing the question of child abuse in any organized manner with any kind of resolve, and we're not putting up very many resources to do it. Currently, we have 72 cases per child abuse worker in Anchorage, for instance, 72 cases. And the recommended is 25, and it should be around 18, really, to do a good job. But 25 is the recommended, and we're at 72. And in addition to that, that's only been from 8 to 5, Mr. Speaker. These workers are so busy that that they are spending their nights and their free time, but it's very hard kind of work to do, and it's very difficult to work 14 hours a day in this kind of an area without going crazy. We have a tremendous incidence of people quitting and being what they call burned out on the question, and we have a very high turnover. So I don't feel that we're addressing the problem. From an economic viewpoint, it would make sense to spend some more money. 25% of the children that are currently institutionalized with paralysis, with other critical head injuries, other kinds of things in our institutions in this state, are 25% of them are directly related to child abuse by the persons who testify claim that 25% of them are there because of injuries received from their parents. We really have banker's hours on child abuse. If a child gets hurt from 8 to 5, we have someone who can take care of them. We have something we can do for that child and for that family. But if it's after 5 o'clock, really not, we don't have much. It's up to the policemen involved to try to find some safe haven for the children involved and something for the other members of the family. And it's a very crisis and traumatic situation. And we don't have a crisis nursery somewhere to take the children and where they can be safe for a few days. And I think that we have no excuse with the budget that we have not to address this problem. So I'd just like to ask that the body would understand if through my committee I recommend that we increase the budget where necessary to provide for these types of things and some changes in the laws where necessary. And if indeed that causes my budget to be increased this year, then I'll take that pressure, and I hope perhaps some of the members would stand by me, and maybe we can hopefully prevent some of this senseless tragedy.
Are there any more special orders? Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, I request the privilege of the floor to talk about tort reform in a meeting I attended this weekend.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on Saturday I attended the Judiciary Committee meeting of the Western Conference of State Governments in San Francisco. And it seems that, what many members here may know, the Western Conference is basically the members of the legislatures of 13 Western states. And it seems that common experiences occur when we have requests coming into different legislatures. That's one thing that we found out. two, 3 years ago in this legislature and several others, we had a problem in the malpractice insurance field, and we attempted to address it by a couple of rather controversial bills, one of which became law and which we're still hearing about. On Saturday in San Francisco, the Judiciary Committee for the 13 Western States had a request from operators and insurers of ski resorts because of a case recently decided in Vermont that their concern may affect, seriously affect, liability premiums. But, Mr. Speaker, I suggested there at the meeting, and of course, as a result of opening my mouth, I ended up being chairman of a subcommittee on the subject with Senator Cornyby from Utah. But I suggested that at the meeting that really this is a more comprehensive problem, and that if legislatures across the country and in the western states simply deal with it on a Band-Aid basis, we'll never really get at the heart of the problem. And Mr. Speaker, the heart of the problem may in part be in my profession, the legal profession, and in the management of insurance companies. The long and the short of the subcommittee is that we're going to be collecting materials to find out what is happening in the various states with regard to suggested generalized tort reform. Mr. Speaker, I think there are three things that cause these problems, and very often people only hear about high jury verdicts for people who were either run over by a garbage truck or fell down the ski slope or sued somebody in medical malpractice or something like that. But there's at least three things that contribute to them, the things that I know of, that are more based upon the traditions of the insurance industry and of the legal profession than any good, sound public policy. One of them is the way in which claims managers and insurance companies deal with claims throughout the country. The other two lawyer members here well know, I'm sure, that too often an insurance company will have a claims manager sitting in Seattle or further away, say from Alaska or wherever the claim exists, and he's not a lawyer and he's communicating with the defense attorney who is working on a particular sequence of cases, and he's sending letters insulting the attorney every month on a diaried basis, saying, why aren't you settling? How dare you recommend such a settlement? We're going to win this case, and so forth, when he knows very little about the law or the facts, and certainly very little about the law in that jurisdiction or generally across the country. And you know darned well, and I've been in this situation, you know darned well that he's really sending blind carbon copies off to the corporate headquarters and everybody else so they can see how a really get-tough guy he is so that he can climb the corporate ladder. And really, what he's doing is not responsibly addressing the realities of claims against the corporate treasury of the insurance company. And that's one problem. The other problem, I think, exists in our profession. Traditionally, because of the strange way that lawyers have viewed their ethical considerations over the last 80 years, somehow it's become accepted practice, proper and perhaps necessary, for plaintiffs' lawyers to charge contingency fees because people who bring lawsuits just can't afford them otherwise, perhaps. But the people who defend lawsuits of this sort traditionally charge an hourly fee that's paid by an insurance company. Mr. Speaker, for that reason, I know lawyers don't really like to think of themselves as behaving like average human beings, and some of them would really strike me dead right now for suggesting such a thing, but they have the same foibles and they're subject to the same conscious and subconscious personal pressures that anyone else is. The doctors have been furious with us because we suggested that they were too when we passed the malpractice bill. And I think the same thing's true of the lawyers, where over a period of the last 30 years there's been a growing plaintiff's bar getting very, very professional with a tremendous incentive to win, because if they lose, they don't get any money at all, and some of them are specialists in this field, and a defense bar that win or lose always gets paid and gets paid by the hour. The incentive in the one case is to win, and the incentive in the other case, if you look only to financial incentives and not ethical niceties, the incentive is to run the meter and keep it running and keep it running. And the Judiciary Committee had a decent number of laymen and plaintiffs and defense lawyers, and nobody seemed to claim that I was wrong in making some of these suggestions. when we were talking about the subject and determining whether the Judiciary Committee of the Western Conference was going to start looking into problems of ski lodges. Well, we decided not to discuss the problems or the problems of liabilities of ski lodges, but rather to look at tort reform throughout the United States and to look at some of these practices. The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee in this state has been interested in tort reform, and I know there are some activities going on here, and perhaps we can learn by pooling our information. But the oversimplified, one-sided view of an advertisement in your local newspaper by an insurance company saying it's just because of juries that get sucked in by brilliant and eloquent trial lawyers, that's only one side of the coin. There's an awful lot going on. And it's not something that's unique to one area of insurance. It's unique to many areas of liability. And I'm very interested in it, and I hope we're able to put together a decent amount of materials for our meeting at the end of June, and I hope I'm able to attend it, and meaning that I hope that we're not in session here.
We're under special orders. Are there... Excuse me. Are there any more special orders? Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like permission to address the body on the Equal Rights Amendment.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, most of the members of the body today received a letter from a gal named Rosalind Gilman that lives in my district in Anchorage, and it concerned voting for ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. Mr. Speaker, I know Rosalind, and she's a very concerned, pleasant young lady, and I think one of her main concerns might be that the Equal Rights Amendment will get back to the Alaska legislature. As most of the members in this body know, the Equal Rights Amendment is three states short throughout the nation of becoming ratified, and unless they can get an extension, it appears that it will have to start making the rounds again. And I rather suspect that Rosalind was more concerned with the next time around than when the legislature passed the amendment back in the early 70s.
Are there any more special orders? Announcements, committee meetings. Representative Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, the Finance Committee will meet at 1:15 this afternoon. We'll be taking up House Bill 596 relating to the Permanent Fund. I would suppose that the discussions may also touch on House Bill 595 that also relates to the Permanent Fund, though it's not in the committee yet. After the permanent fund bill is considered, we'll take up the university budget. There will be a meeting also tomorrow morning at 8:30, at which we'll try once again on House Bill 133, the municipal lands bill.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, House State Affairs at 1:15 will be taking up House Bill 722, Alaska Council on Science and Technology, House Bill 679, dealing with the Fairview Loop Road and appropriation, and House Bill 870, a special appropriation to the new Capital Site Planning Commission.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, Hess will meet at 3 this afternoon, and we do not have any bills up. We have a work session with the Commissioners of Health, Social Services, and the Department of Education on two public laws, 94-142, which deals with the education of all handicapped children, and Section 504, which deals with the equal rights for the handicapped. And the intent of the work session is to find out how deeply we're in because of federal legislation before we consider other state legislation.
Further announcements? Representative McKinnon.
Commerce will meet tonight at 7 to consider House Bill 703, dealing with state savings and loan associations.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, the House Labor Management Committee will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock to consider House Bill 583. It's basically some band-aids offered by the governor to correct a bill that he introduced and we passed last year.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, Budget and Audit will meet at noon in the Senate Finance Room.
Representative Gardner.
Judiciary Committee at 3 o'clock today on the Criminal Code.
Further announcements? Further business come before the House. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Rudd be excused from the call of the House March 10th through 12th.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The member will be excused on the dates indicated.
Speaker, if there's no further business to come before the body, I'll ask unanimous consent. We stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, the House is adjourned.